Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette Recaps, His Dark Materials with Peter Sagal. I'm Greta Johnson.
And I'm Trisha Bobita.
And we are joined by Peter Sagal.
Hello, ladies, to quote another HBO series that we'll never speak of.
What is that from?
It was a completely failed HBO series that was created by Stephen Merchant, who, of course, collaborated with Ricky Gervais
for
on creating
The Office.
And it was one of those series in which there was a huge genre of these in which some man thinks that his failure with women will be of great interest to the larger world.
Oh, you know what? I am familiar with this general premise. Yeah. Should we jingle it right now just for the sake of like a long tangent?
I am warning you guys, we are now in the first 2 minutes of the first episode.
Okay.
Keep your powder dry.
Blah, 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 whatever. Peter, nobody cares.
You see, I'm telling you, you're going to spoil your dinner if you have dessert first.
We'll see. I feel like you've said that before, too. Anyway, so today we're recapping season one, episode one of His Dark Materials. It was called Lyra's Jordan. Before we actually get to the pilot, I think we should talk a little bit about why we decided to take this on as our next recap project beyond Game of Thrones.
Right.
Well, for one, there's no more Game of Thrones.
Because, one, there's no more Game of Thrones. Yeah, that's a very
good
point.
That's the most honest answer.
Yeah, it really is. There's no more Game of Thrones. Well, I mean, we have talked over, I guess, the last year, really, about what we might recap next. And we rejected a lot of other things because some of us didn't like them. Some of us might have liked them, except they were bad. Westworld. And but we arrived at this because, and I will start and you will tell me that I'm wrong. Like Game of Thrones, it is based on a justifiably beloved series of fantasy
and
novels.
And a completed series of fantasy novels.
Thank you, Mr. Pullman. Those fantasy novels, if you don't know, are collectively called His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman. They're books that at least Greta and I have read.
Yes.
And loved.
Yes.
I loved it. And like Game of Thrones, there is the potential at least for this to be much more than just a fantasy world and heroes and villains. That at least in my memory, the books are quite deep.
So yeah, when's the last time you read the books?
That is a good question. A long time ago. In fact, I just, because I felt I should, got another copy of The Golden Compass, book one in the series, and started reading it, and was immediately reminded by how little I remember. There were a lot of things I'm like, uh-oh, I don't remember that. And then seeing the series, they were like, oh yeah, those are characters, and I don't remember those characters well at all. And this is in great contrast to Game of Thrones, where I had read reread the books quite recently and thus could be very pedantic and annoying about comparing them to the books.
Well, that's very exciting. I have done a fair amount of rereading lately, partly because Philip Pullman has a new trilogy out that is based on the same world. And so I reread The Golden Compass last year. And I just recently reread The Amber Spyglass, which is the third one of that series.
Right. You skipped The Subtle Knife.
I skipped The Subtle Knife. The next two are very strange books. But anyway, yes, Golden Compass was like one of my favorite books when I was a kid when it came out.
It is fantastic.
So I'm super excited
for this. I, of course, was a grown-ass man when it came out. But
yeah,
that's always a problem.
And Trisha, you have not read the book, so you're sort of our litmus test for if this show is going to work if you don't know the source material.
Exactly. I should point out that I did offer to read the books, but then we decided for scientific reasons.
Yes. You are our control.
I am the control that is just the TV viewer. So if you're somebody who also hasn't read the books, I will be in your boat as we go along.
And we are going to try not to do book spoilers.
Right.
I want to make sure that people who are just watching the show can do that. So like we'll talk about maybe a little bit how things are different in the books leading up to things.
Mm-hmm.
But like I don't want to spoil anything about what's going to happen based on what's there.
I don't want to get in the way of the outline, but Greta, can you explain why you love the book so much? Because it's really why we're here.
I mean, I think a lot of it is elements that you saw in the pilot, right? I mean, the main character is Lyra Balacqua. She's this 12-year-old girl. She's super sassy. She kind of doesn't give a fuck. She's obsessed with the North.
Yes.
Which happens to be where I grew up. You know, Northern Lights, I think,
which was the original title of the book.
Which was the original title of the book when it was released in Britain. I think, too, like all that original sin stuff is just very interesting. And I just fucking love it.
Yeah.
Man.
I will say.
Oh, also armored polar bears.
Polar bears. That's coming.
Speaking of spoilers.
The Panzerbjorn. I forgot. That's a great term.
Yeah. See.
All the things that you said are correct. I will say that.
Thanks, Peter.
I know. Well, let's get off to a surprising start. Meaning not that you're right, but I felt the same way. And that in particular, one thing you mentioned, anybody who is reading young adult or even kids lit, certainly in my generation, and if you have daughters, which I do, it's a problem finding books with great female protagonist.
Yeah, and she is great. And I mean, she was one of the only ones when I read this in seventh grade in 1997. It was very exciting.
Yes, and when I picked it up a few years later, I mean, even J.K. Rowling made her hero, Harry Potter, a boy because she understood that the mass readers, they've all been trained to, girls have been trained to accept boys as heroes. Boys have not been trained to accept girls. And so finding
Lyra. It's great Lyra. That you've already pronounced it incorrectly. That's
I believe
perfect.
There was a betting pool on who's the first name I would,
it's
I would
Lyra.
Mispronounce.
It's literally the main character
I
of
know.
The show.
All right,
it's
fine,
perfect.
Fine. But she is truly one of the great protagonists in all of fantasy literature.
Yeah.
And she's a 12-year-old girl, which is pretty awesome. I would put her up there with Coraline as my favorite female protagonist.
Yeah, yeah. This one is more resonant to me than Coraline.
Yeah. Oh, but, I'm sure. You know. I mean, well, obviously the books are longer and richer and deeper.
For sure.
Wait, what year did the first book come out?
The first book came out in 97, I believe.
Right before Harry Potter, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how I missed these books.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, and I mean, I didn't hear about Harry Potter until several years later. Prisoner of Azkaban was out was when I first learned about that series.
One of the other reasons that I love this book series, you may remember, maybe you guys were too young, that when Harry Potter came out, there was this bizarre evangelical Christian backlash. Kids should not read these books. They're satanic. They're about the devil, which is nonsense when it comes to Harry Potter. It's utterly ridiculous. But you know, His Dark Materials, actually satanic. It's everything that those foolish critics of Harry Potter worried about, and it was happening in plain sight at the same time, and they didn't notice.
It was just under the radar enough.
They just couldn't figure it out, but it's great.
So that's partly why maybe it's taken this long to get this level of an adaptation, right? There's the movie that everybody sort of throws shade at with Nicole Kidman from years ago, but is it the fear of sort of, the bat signal that conservative family groups put up about kids' literature being not good for kids? Is that bat signal what they were afraid of and why it took so long to get this made?
It's possible. I do remember the movie, which is not good, despite a lot of great things in it. Daniel Craig plays the lead, Nicole Kidman, a lot of money.
The third character, a lot of money.
Yes. I do remember that one of the things that happened in that movie is they toned down the religious aspect, because if you've seen the pilot, you've already figured out that the villainous organization, the dark wizards, if you will, is the church, or as they call it, the magisterium.
Mm-hmm.
That's setting us up right now. Already all this conversation about heresy. And they really toned that down. They made it something different in the movie for fear of offending religious communities.
So then they offended the book fans.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Trisha, have you seen the movie?
I think probably ages and ages ago, but I also intentionally didn't rewatch it, because science.
Yep. I rewatched it I may have watched it even for the first time last week.
Yeah.
It is really terrible.
Why is it terrible? Because I think this is relevant.
It is relevant. There's a lot of very lazy explication to get from point A to point B in terms of the plot lines that they need to get to. And it just feels really obvious. They just sort of like hand it to you on a platter and are like, here you go. You're welcome. Which is just, I think so much about, especially the book, is that there's like this joy of discovery, and it opens on this scene and you just don't know what's going on and you have to piece it all together. And it's awesome.
Right.
And the show has already deviated from that a little bit. But my hope is that, I mean, already it's better than the movie for sure, even though they did make some similar choices to the movie in terms of the opening scenes, which I thought was interesting.
We can talk about that. Oh, I will also say, before we get into the thing, that one of the things I loved, and I'm sure this was really compelling to the young adult readers, is the whole concept of demons.
Yes.
Which, if you've watched the show, you now know that in this world, every human being has a demon, an animal spirit that is constantly with them.
And there was a slightly obnoxious set of words about that in the very beginning, setting it up. But that's fine.
But the whole, I found, and I was, like I said, a grown-ass man, the idea of having an animal spirit with you at all times,
yeah.
a close friend, a counterpart, or an external soul,
yeah.
was such a childhood dream come true,
right?
Right? Yeah. It's the most – I just was a kid again imagining how wonderful that would have been to
yeah.
have this animal ally with you at all times.
Yeah,
Who you can talk to and who talks to you. And that, to me, is actually one of the huge challenges of this.
Yes.
Because as the movie showed, it's actually weird to have human beings walking around constantly accompanied by different kinds of animals.
Yes. Right. It's like as many humans as you have in a room, you also have as many animals walking around.
Exactly. And I noticed one of the few notes I made watching the pilot was how much they cheated.
Yes.
How many times there was a shot of a bunch of people and their demons were nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
I've decided that the presence of a demon is like a reverse red shirt already.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean.
That basically if somebody doesn't have one, then they definitely aren't important.
Right.
So before we get to talking about the pilot, I think we should discuss what our demons would be.
Oh, okay.
Peter, I think you should start.
I remember figuring it out, but I forgot what I told you. What did I tell you?
You said a miniature donkey.
Yes, I did. And I think now that you've brought that back up,
do you stand by that?
I stand by it because
good.
I'm
a grown
small,
ass, as it
I'm
were.
I'm small. I'm extremely stubborn and not good for much. I mean, I love donkeys. Who doesn't love a donkey, right? They're useful for hauling things. But a miniature donkey? What are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
Here, pull this little wagon. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That fits. I mean, like keys and wallet, I guess.
Yes.
Tricia, what about you?
So he's a fanny pack of a donkey? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. You can put a fanny pack on him.
I mean, again, based on just what you guys told me these animals are all about and now what I've decided I think about them from the pilot, I'm going to stick with my original theory, which is a very shaggy, slightly disheveled golden retriever.
Yeah, I like that one, but with a cool haircut.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I mentioned when we were discussing this was the fact that, in the book at least, all servants have dog demons, which to me is a little eruption of British classicism.
Yes.
Which bothers me a little
bit.
Well, also the determinism of you are going to be whatever you are, basically as you're being bar mitzvahed, your demon is telling you what your job's going to be. Like it's a very terrible one of those tests you take in middle school that's like, what career should you choose? But in a much more serious way.
Yeah. And what if you don't want to be a servant, but like your career is a... you know, freelance podcaster flames out and you have to get a job as a butler. Does your demon change?
And you're just stuck with this fucking donkey.
I know. It'd be terrible if I got fired. I had to get a job as a servant and like all the dogs looking at my donkey and my donkey's looking at the dog going, what? Totally would happen.
That's pretty great. I think mine is a puffin. That's what we decided.
Yes, because it's Alaskan.
It's Alaskan.
Which we needed.
And it's kind of terrifying looking.
I do not think a puffin is terrifying. What are you talking about?
Greta, I think also you're a bird that would swim. Like you're much more a fish than you are a bird, really?
Yeah. Okay, so before we actually chat about the pilot, should we listen to some voicemails?
Sure.
First? We've got a pretty good spectrum. Do you want to start with the one that thought it was bad or the one that thought it was great?
Why don't we do great then bad?
Okay.
Hi, Nerdad podcast team. My name is Camila, and my personal demon would be a hummingbird. And I just wanted to say I was blown away by the series premiere. It was really amazing. The opening sequence was beautiful. And I particularly love all of the stuff that they did with the Egyptians and how they portrayed it like a full-fledged culture with rituals. I was definitely that disappointed. We stray far away from the horrible movie territory. Thanks.
I agree that the opening credits were very, very beautiful.
Weren't they awesome?
They were. They were lovely. I missed Remen Dualy's music, the guy who did Game of Thrones and Westworld.
Yeah.
So the guy has range. He's good.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't realize he had done Westworld
One of my criticisms of the show is, in fact, the music, which I thought was kind of obvious and manipulative.
Oh.
But anyway.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's listen to someone who kind of like felt middling about it.
Hey, Nerdette and Peter. This is Jonah from Chicago. Really glad you guys are keeping the band together for another show. I thought it was a really interesting world they set up, but I felt they were really rushing things in terms of kind of getting the plot in gear. And I really wanted to get to know some of the characters better and, You know, let the characters breathe a little bit more and, you know, just have some more interesting dialogue.
But I'm looking forward to see where things go.
Okay.
All right.
And
you know what that sounds like to me?
Huh?
That sounds like a reader, because as a television watcher, I don't want to just sit around. Like, I think right. That's one of the big differences, right, is we used to talk about how the early seasons of Game of Thrones, there would be these long stretches where it was just like somebody on a horse indefinitely.
Yep, we sure
and
did.
Then yeah. It turned into a real television show in the last couple seasons. Now, lots of people didn't like that. But the pace at which you have to move to keep me, the, you know, sort of scatterbrained TV viewer, happy is different than what the lovers of this book are probably used to. So even though it's going to be longer than a movie, they still got things to do and places to go. So I'm glad that it wasn't slower.
Oh, I loved the pacing. I thought it went really well, actually. And, you know, part of what's complicated with this story is that there are still so many more characters to meet that they can't spend too long on, you know, the master of Jordan.
We've taken away an E from maester and we've added it to demon.
Oh, there you go. Well, and we even had a crypt, which was great.
It was a good crypt.
There's a crypt. Okay, let's listen to one more voicemail and then we'll dive in.
Hello, Greta, Trisha, and Peter. This is Ryan. My demon would be a triceratops. Is that allowed?
Yes.
I just watched the first episode. I would give it a C. I think it reminded me more of the movie than the book, unfortunately. I hope I find it more engaging in the future. Thanks.
So a pretty broad spectrum of opinions there between those three listeners.
I know.
A dinosaur demon had not even occurred to me. That is delightful.
I don't know if Pullman, I don't remember if Pullman addresses this, but there have to be rules about what demons can be. Because I was wondering, what if your demon's an elephant?
Right.
Then how do you get, you know, how do you go to a dinner
indoors?
Party? Indoors. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's then like, you just don't, I think.
I just got to wait out here.
I think that's part of it, because they do refer to that a little bit in the books. Like, if you end up with, like, a fish demon, like, you just have to live by the water for
right.
your entire
Oh, I think
life,
you're right. They you do. Know? Yeah.
I was joking with somebody, unless you, like, just got one of those plastic bags with water full, you know?
You're just put carrying, a fish in there. Yeah. Carrying in your
like
demons.
Like a carnival goldfish?
Like a goldfish?
Exactly.
That is hilarious.
Wait, what is the range of me to demon? Is it like me to my phone if I'm wearing my Apple Watch? Like if I walk down the hallway at some point?
That is an excellent analogy.
Yeah, probably. Or like Bluetooth speakers, pretty much, I would say. Yeah.
In the books, I remember that one of the things that happens is somebody, a person appears in some context without their demon.
Yes.
The demon is nowhere to be seen.
Yes.
And that is, and I remember Pullman trying to explain how incredibly weird that is. It's like watching somebody walk around without their head. It's like you never, it's impossible.
It's not even just weird, it's like sickening.
Yeah.
Because like, it's a deformation essentially.
You can't even look at it. It's so awful. And so yes, that would imply that your demon always has to be somewhere near.
Man, if you're a demon who's a bird, that's got to be kind of boring then, because you can't really fly anywhere.
Well, I think that's partly why you may have noticed most of the Egyptians have bird demons, because they're on the water. And so as they're traveling in the boats, then the birds can fly more, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm going to ask Trisha first. You've never read the books. What did you think?
I liked it. I thought that the opening scene was almost a carbon copy of the start of Harry Potter. So, and I know it came out before Harry Potter, but still it was like, you know.
You mean of them running around on the rooftops?
No, you mean the baby
no,
being
I mean,
delivered.
No, I mean James McAvoy as Hagrid. Yeah.
And that apparently, and I didn't know this, I didn't remember that from the book.
It's not in the book. It's from the next trilogy.
Yes, which are
prequels. Belle Sauvage. Well, it's very confusing. The first one of this subsequent trilogy is a prequel.
Yeah.
The second one actually takes place after. It takes place 20 years later.
Yeah. And you're right. It is exactly the same scene, but that is a classic scene of like literature going back thousands of years.
Yeah,
the
right.
Changeling baby, the baby removed from its mysterious parents. We don't know who they might be yet. And delivered unto an institution to be raised as a foundling.
Well, and the flood thing too, right? It's like it has obvious biblical symbolism in there.
Should we? By the way, I don't know if people know this, but the title of the trilogy and now the TV show, His Dark Materials, is a quote from Milton, because this is suffused with Paradise Lost.
Yes. Would you like to mansplain some Milton to the people?
Why, yes, I would.
Gather round and listen while old Peter Sagal mansplains this show to you.
I was entrapped That is not fair. You can't say,
well,
please,
dude,
mansplain this.
No, I didn't
and I say,
please.
Okay, and then you play the, no, that was total entrapment. I feel like John DeLorean. John Milton, who I think was more or less a contemporary of Shakespeare, a little later. No, he was later. I just remembered.
Love it's watching you do this.
I was an English major, but it's been a while.
So was I, but I'm not even going to try.
Yeah, I know. He was actually later than, he was like two generations later than Shakespeare. He wrote famously Paradise Lost, which is a book-length, epic book-length poem. It begins with Satan being thrown out of heaven, and then it goes through the temptation of Adam and Eve mm-hmm. and the fall of them from Eden, Paradise Lost.
Yep.
And the quote, I was actually, I just had to look this up. His Dark Materials comes from a moment early on. The poem Paradise Lost begins with Satan already being thrown out of heaven. He's rebelled against God. I don't know. Does anybody know this story? Is this like well known these days?
I mean, I read Paradise Lost in college.
Satan was the idea. Satan was God's favorite angel. He decided that he would rather overthrow God. He led a rebellion against God, was thrown out, ended up in hell. And Paradise Lost begins right after that. And then the first action is Satan says, well, I'm going to leave hell and I'm going to go see what else is out there because I've heard there's this world that God has created.
I'm going to ruin God's creation.
I'm going to go. I've heard there's just these other creatures that aren't angels, and I'm going to go see what they are. And he's looking upon this gulf of chaos between hell and the rest of, I don't know, the universe. And he comments on his dark materials. His, I think, is God's, and dark materials is the stuff of creation. And there's this moment of like, what could everything possibly be? I think that's my best stab at it.
Perfect.
All right.
So, Tricia, what else did you think about the pilot?
I mean, I think it definitely feels like a show for kids. And I actually don't mean that as a pejorative, but compared to everything else HBO does except Sesame Street, basically, they just aren't filling it with gratuitous yet.
Yeah,
they aren't
no
filling
boobs.
It with
no boobs.
Yeah, no nudity, no gratuitous violence yet. You know,
a
there's
a little
there's,
scary, but not too, not like unhandleable.
Well, and it's a little bit like Spielberg kids scary, which I think he does kids scary the best, right? Where it's like, you know, just that shot at the very end of Roger, yeah. and we don't know what he's trapped inside, but he's trapped inside something.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ominous things that are, you know, the crypt, things that scare kids that they gravitate towards because they're adventurous. That was fun. That was, yeah. mm-hmm. I think, exciting. I thought, you know, the young actress who's playing this leading role oh. is got a lot of work
Daphne
to do. Like
Keen.
Holy
Daphne
cow.
Keen, I'm a fan.
I yeah. loved her
she
so
is.
Much.
If there's one, yeah, if there's one reason why I'm confident that this will be a show worth talking about, it's her. She's so good.
I think the thing I loved so much about her was that I was so impressed with the scope of like having that wide-eyed wonderment and fascination and curiosity and enthusiasm, yeah. but also like refusing to be told what to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Which just, I think, captures her essence so
yeah.
beautifully.
There's a habit in all literature, not just kid literature, for the hero or heroine to be somewhat passive as things happen to them.
I mean,
like you think of the first book of Harry Potter, for the first three quarters, he's just looking around going,
just along
what
for
the
ride.
What the hey is all of this? And Lyra, from the very beginning. See, this is what happens. You said that wrong. And I say, oh, my God, I said it wrong. But I can't remember which version was wrong. So I'm just as confused. But from the very beginning of the book, and I hope the TV show, she is an independent actor who's not
yeah.
just waiting
yes,
around.
Yes. And, man, Asriel, I thought, was exquisitely unhinged.
Yeah, he was good. I thought, I mean, they cast Daniel Craig as
yes.
Lord, which is perfect casting. He's got such weight. But James McAvoy did a great job, and partially because, as you say, he seemed a little nuts
mm-hmm.
and a little unstable and obviously obsessed with larger things that are driving him. And this, as I remember, will be important later on.
I mean, I think a lot of people will know James McAvoy best from his role as Professor X in the reboot of the X-Men franchise, right?
Mm-hmm. So, right.
Patrick Stewart played it in sort of the original cohort of the movies, and then he's But James McAvoy has had this role for, gosh, I don't know, maybe almost a half dozen films, maybe even more. Like, wow, it's hard to keep track of how many of those X-Men movies there are. I've seen all of them. I love them. But he has also done some like dark, strange, weird roles where his mind is fractured and he's playing multiple characters. He's playing multiple personalities while playing a similar sort of unhinged character. So there is a darkness and a strangeness in his performances that I think he's tapping into just enough of here, because it's not really the point for him to seem like completely gone around the bend, but this definitely seems like a person who could be an unreliable source of information, and I like that.
Yeah, he has a weird fantasy resume, because he also played Tumnus the Fawn.
What?
In the most recent Narnia movies, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But if you really want to see James McAvoy, like the first time I saw him, I was like, God, this guy is good, was in the movie Atonement. I highly recommend it.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
He also voiced Hazel in the recent BBC animated version of Watership Down, which I couldn't get through, despite my love for Watership Down.
That is quite a spread.
I know. He's been out there.
Okay, we'll talk more in just a minute. So the book opens with Lyra hiding in the closet of that room.
A wardrobe, in
a
fact,
wardrobe.
Which I think is a knowing nod to C.S. Lewis.
Mm-hmm. And watching the Tokai.
Ha-ha!
Damn it.
The tables have turned, Johnson.
Watching the
Once
Tokai.
Once you, the student, and I, the master, sorry.
Get poisoned.
Yes.
But I thought they did a really good, like, that setup of the scene with Azrael ahead of time in the north, getting super excited about figuring this stuff out and saying he's going to go down to Jordan and present this,
right.
I thought made a lot of sense and worked and didn't feel too obvious, but was like, would be useful setup for someone like you, Trisha, who's like, wait, what's going on?
What is this dust?
Yes.
Exactly.
Anyway, so Trisha, you find yourself as the newcomer to this world. Interested in it. You're like, what's going on? What's happening next?
Yeah, I will say, though, the something about the format of it and the way it was set up, I do wonder what the next 15 episodes will be. Because, right, we have this 10-episode season and then I think a 6-episode season, and they're like, that's it. 16
I think
episodes.
It's 8 and 8, actually.
Oh, is it 8 and 8?
I think
but
so.
But it's like, that's it. We have this finite beginning, middle, and end. There's something very exciting about knowing
they have
that.
Plotted out the entire series as 16 episodes, so they'll presumably get to the end of the third book.
His Dark Materials. Yeah.
Wow,
I think that's the plan.
Me.
I know.
Which, compared to Game of Thrones, again, kind of refreshing to have the creators of the show know where it's going and how long it's going to take and
absolutely
be very intentional from the start.
Yeah.
So that is encouraging to me. But yeah, it's funny. It does feel like a very well-made YA movie to me right now. But as we get to know more characters and find out more things, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Were there any moments in this first episode where you were like, this is not working for me, I don't care about these people, or I don't get what's happening? Like, I'm curious how you feel about the Egyptians, actually. You mentioned the Egyptian bar mitzvah, which I think is a great way of putting that.
I thrilled, Trisha, when you said
that. That I actually liked a lot. And getting to know those characters who were a little grittier and more real felt interesting to me. I felt like the kind of very heavy-handed foreshadowing between the master of Jordan and the librarian, who was her teacher. Like, she must, it was like, okay, we get it. She's important, right?
Yeah.
Like, she must not know what is to come and she must do all the things and it is important and the world depends on it. It's like, okay, like, we figured that. But
it
was a little heavy-handed in the exposition there for me.
Did the librarian give you Leo McGarry vibes?
Only a little, and only because he looks a bit like John Spencer.
I thought it was very sweet. So, yeah, I was kind of surprised by the Egyptian setup as them being freedom fighters, because that was something that had not really come up in the books, but I thought was kind of an interesting.
The Egyptians are obviously sort of this universe's version of the Roma. But do you remember, because I don't, Greta, what the Egyptians are like in the book? What are they supposed to be? Are they like the Roma, i.e. they're a distinct ethnic group?
I don't know. I don't know if they're a distinct ethnic group, but they definitely have their own cultural traditions and are pretty separate from the rest of culture. You know, like, they are chilling on boats, going back and forth. They have places where they live. They have, like, their own, you know, like, ways of expressing respect to one another that you wouldn't know unless you were Egyptian or knew someone who was Egyptian who could tell you what to say. So it is very it is its own distinct entity for sure.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I feel like they're more just separate from everything than they are like trying to advance justice,
yeah.
Which is what it seems like they were kind of getting at.
I read at least one other recap in which it indicated that that has been significantly changed from the book, where it seemed to indicate that they were more of an ethnic minority in the way that the Roma are in real life, and that they have been transformed into a multi-ethnic group of people that are bound together more by culture than race.
That coming of age ceremony was really interesting because that's something that did not happen in the books at all. But it was a great way to kind of get to know their world a little bit and to care about the costumes.
And they have their own ritual. And it also emphasized something that they want you to know, which is that a demon takes many different forms when you're a child. And when you become an adolescent, it settles. That's apparently the technical term, into one form for the rest of your life, which is, again, is a little determinative, but kind of a good analogy for what adolescence and transition to adulthood is like.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as an only TV watcher, it definitely did help me understand the importance of the animal as opposed to it being a pet or a sidekick. It's like, no, this animal is sort of as in control, potentially. Although it did seem like the fact that some of them sort of are debating each other, like, don't do that. Is it like, is it your conscience? Is it your soul? Like, the fact that it has its own opinions that you can sort of argue with it is very fascinating to me. And I think it'll be fun to watch that play out with some of the actors.
Was I right in that demons only speak to their humans? They never speak to anybody else?
No, they can speak to other people and other demons. They often will convert, like, you know, if you and I were chatting, our demons might be chatting too.
Yeah, I remember that from the book, yeah.
But yeah, you can talk to other people's demons too. You don't touch them, though.
No, yes.
Somebody pointed out online that Rogers seems to be trying to mimic in the same way that Rogers trying to be her. The demons are trying to be each other a little bit because he's just so enamored with her.
That's very cute.
He reminded me of a tiny, tiny, tiny John Francis Daly.
I have no idea.
You know that kid from Freaks and Geeks, like the younger brother?
One of the great holes in my cultural background.
Oh, yeah, you're right, Greta.
I really loved how clearly they were able to delineate the fact that, you know, like Lyra and Roger, they're both orphans. They're both sort of wards of the college, but in such different ways, right? Like the strata in which they live. Like Roger
is a servant.
He's literally pouring her water at this fancy dinner where she's sitting at the table. I thought that was a really well illustrated. It wasn't like too heavy handed, but it very clearly depicted the fact that these two, while they're friends, come from very different places. Yeah. And that could be difficult down the line.
Whenever you read anything by a British author, you have to grapple with the fact that they grew up, perhaps, in a society stratified by class.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the world of, say, Downton Abbey is still very much alive in cultural memory. That some people are above stairs, some people are below stairs. There are people who are served and people who are servants. And it's not quite a Hindu caste system, but I think it suffuses it's in Lord of the Rings, you know, like, you know, Samwise, Master Frodo. You know, this is a natural assumption. There are nobles and servants. And I think it plays out in these books.
Mm-hmm. Tricia, what's your read on Mrs. Coulter?
Bad news bears.
What?
Lyra, do you know why I'm here? The master has asked if I can find a place for you. And naturally, I wanted to meet you first. And now that I've met you, I like you, and I want to offer you a position as my assistant. Now, you'll need to learn fast, and I won't take any slacking, but I think with your enthusiasm and my know-how, we could make quite the team.
She has such a Dolores Umbridge vibe to her. I love it.
She does. It doesn't help that her last name, which was perfectly innocent, when Philip Pullman invented it back in 1997, has now become associated with one of the most loathsome people in American culture. But that's a coincidence. I liked her. She seemed, I remember Nicole Kidman in the movie being so obviously villainous when you met her.
Yes.
Just doing the whole beautiful, dangerous, horrible person thing.
Yes.
And this Mrs. Coulter, let me put it this way. I totally bought that Lyra went off with her. That her approach to Lyra seemed very seductive. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Lyra would be like, yes, he left me behind. I really want to do this. You just showed up. You've got all these things for me. Let's go.
Well, I think also the allure of being the only woman in that room and not wearing those boring ass robes, right? Like she shows up at the perfect time, but she also presents herself, as a female scholar in a room, in a space where Lyra doesn't see a lot of examples of that. So it makes total sense to me that she would gravitate towards
her. Sure, not only that, but Lyra has been raised entirely, it seems, by men.
Yeah.
And she would be dying, I think, for a mother figure. And all, here comes it's interesting that her name isn't a lord or duchess. Her name is Mrs.
Mm-hmm.
She is introduced, and this is, of course, in the books, as a married woman, mm-hmm. meaning where's the husband? Where's the daddy to her mommy figure? It's interesting.
I always imagined her golden-haired monkey to be longer-haired and
yes.
more broad-shouldered.
Me too. I thought it was strangely small. I had exactly the same reaction. I thought of it more of like an orangutan, even though orangutans are apes and not monkeys, don't write in.
So, Tricia, what's your read on dust?
I don't know about this dust.
Gentlemen, I believe this is proof that dust is exclusively attracted to adults.
Chasriel, be very careful.
Well, that's only where it begins to get exciting, Master. I took this photogram a few days ago.
The aurora, the northern lights.
Yes, that's right. When seen with the ordinary emulsion. But I'd like you to look at it again using mine. A city in the sky. A myriad of worlds of which the Magisterium controls only one. A myriad of worlds made visible only through that most distasteful of substances, dust.
Clear the room. None of us can hear this.
It's so hard, you guys, to not just Google everything or read the books because everything.
I know you do, but don't. Our control. Don't spoil the experiment.
So what's the thing that you're dying the most to read up? Like, I know generally you probably just want to know all the things, but is there one thing in particular where you're like, damn it, that alethiometer, what is happening?
I think it's pretty funny that she was just shouting at the thing as if it was an Alexa.
Yes. That is
which is
funny.
Apparently not how it works. So
no.
Check one idea off the list. But yeah, I don't know how the compass works. I don't know what the dust is. It's driving me bananas. We'll see how long I last.
Please.
Being the person who doesn't know the stuff.
It's interesting. When we started with Game of Thrones, we were, what was it, fifth season was our first season?
Yes. So we have not discussed a premiere episode
right.
before.
And so by the time we started talking about Game of Thrones, A, we knew it was popular. B, we had set opinions about it. And we could jump right in and talking about characters we knew. And now we, even though you and I have read the books, we're starting with a whole new thing. And I, just like you apparently, Greta, was really concerned with, is this a good pilot? Is this a TV episode that creates a world and makes you interested in it and makes you want to find out what happens next? And Tricia, you're our only hope because I'm interested in what happens next because I happen to know what happens next is really interesting. But what if you didn't? I remember, for example, I watched the first episode or two of Succession.
Oh.
Which I know everybody loves, and people, you should be recapping that because it's so good.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking to myself, I just hate these people.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spend any more time with them, as wonderful as the performances, acting,
yes.
writing, et cetera,
yes.
are. And I'm wondering, are these people compelling enough for you, Tricia, that you want to stay and find out what happens to them?
I think I am interested enough in the human characters we've met so far that I would have watched, like, another couple of hours, but the idea that there are whole parallel worlds or alternative worlds of some sort, like the Doctor Who fan in me, now I'm in. That's the thing that has me curious. Because if it was just a slightly different period piece set in the UK with like a bit of magic here and there, I don't know if it's enough for me, because it's not as magical as Harry Potter. Clearly, like the world is not quite so magical, and it's not that same sort of interesting juxtaposition between Muggle world and Wizarding world. But if there are whole other worlds in some dust, I guess, then sure, yeah. What's that? What's going on? What's that about? Who's the other kid in the staircase in the opening credits? The internet told me that, but I still don't know who he is. Really, I just know his name is Will.
What did the internet say?
That's Will. Uh-huh. And someone is named Will. And also, Hot Priest is going to show up eventually, and Lin-Manuel Miranda. So, you know, you've got me until you get Hamilton on screen, which apparently is episode 4.
Oh, is that when? Yeah, that makes
apparently
sense.
Apparently, I have to wait till episode 4 to see Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I have no
but
idea.
But I will
I
stick with it.
I know he's a character that shows up later, but I don't know when exactly.
People do think he's terribly cast. Some people do.
Those people are going to be wrong. I promise
the
you.
I know. I'm not upset. I feel okay about it. But yeah, the person who played Lee Scoresby in the movie was Sam Elliott. He's like a grizzled cowboy.
And he's a grizzled cowboy of the air.
Lee Scoresby does have like a southern accent.
Yeah.
Who's from Texas. So it will be interesting to see how Lin-Manuel Miranda pulls that off.
I believe in him.
I thought it was great. I'm like so happy to live in this world.
Yeah, so
yeah,
I never even asked. I was so interested in Trisha.
I was super curious about that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I don't know. It's so... The Golden Compass is one of my favorite books, right? And I read it at, like, such a formative age. And then to have gotten to, like, spend more time in that world lately because these new books are coming out. And then to be able to see it in this show, like, I just... had so much fun.
You're probably feeling the way I felt going to see the first Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah.
Which I went by myself.
Yeah.
Because it was so meaningful to me.
Yes.
Those were my books growing up.
Yes, yeah.
To finally see this world on screen in a hopefully respectful way was such an emotional... I was both excited and terrified. I was like, what if it sucks?
Yeah.
To see the... And of course, in that case, I was pretty happy. But I totally understand the emotional place you're in.
Yeah, especially Lyra, just to see how, like, she... You know, like, there's this moment where she's running up the stairs two by two. And it was just like... She's just so fucking cool, and
there
I just love it. Yeah.
There she is.
She's doing it. She's just, like, charging through the world.
There she is running on the roof of Jordan College.
Yeah, it's just really cool.
Surrounded by doddering academics.
Yeah. Surrounded by doddering academics, not all of whom are white, which is also really
great. Also very Clark Peters from The Wire. We're all looking for Harry Potter veterans. Hey, there's a Wire veteran.
Yeah, there's a lot of good crossovers that we can continue to discuss.
I'm just going to shout Scholastic Sanctuary in life sometimes.
Yes, see if it helps, Trisha.
Is there a public radio version of Scholastic?
Sanctuary! Sanctuary!
Okay, but guys, I have a question that we have not gotten to yet, which is... We think that maybe this Coulter is a bit devious, but also the big baddie seems to be the gobblers who are stealing children. That's a very silly name for a very mean thing to do.
Well, you said earlier, I think, Trisha, that this is a scary to children show. And what is more scary to children than to be kidnapped by villains? We remember, I hope... The Child Catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I still have nightmares about
him.
Yeah, there's something totally terrifying to children to being stolen away. And so that's a great villain for this particular show if you conceive of it as being, let's be generous, all ages.
It is. And those scenes were scary, too.
Yeah.
I mean, like...
Well, partially because of that presumably evil demon with the glowing eyes that shows up.
Mm-hmm. And then the fox.
It took Billy.
Yeah.
Yeah, little Billy Costa.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Was the fox Billy's, the abducted child? Was that? I thought the fox belonged to
No, the fox, they say later something. I think Roger told Lyra that they've been hearing stuff about a singing man with a fox demon.
Yeah. So the fox demon helps the creepiness.
Which is real creepy.
Yeah.
And was it really that obvious that all the bad shit's going down in London? That was kind of a funny scene, right, where Mrs. Coulter's like, oh, well, yeah, we'll for sure figure it out in London.
Yeah. Well, everybody seems to know that the children are being taken to London because the Egyptians know that, too.
Right.
Yeah. And I didn't Bear Mormont, I'm just going to call him that. didn't he have
you
an
You mean John Fa.
I mean
no,
Lord
I mean
Commander
Mormont.
Bear Mormont. didn't he have the old bear, didn't he have a theory as like, we know they're in London? Because
that's true. His theory seemed much more sound than Mrs. Coulter's, which was just like, well, Oxford is too small for this sort of thing.
Everybody
really
would
happen.
Know. So it's got to be in London.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out.
We sure will. And we'll see what more interesting production design. One last thing, that shot in what is clearly like the headquarters of the Magisterium.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing.
It was pretty cool. But when they looked out over that enormous arena, I'm like, no way does that roof stay up. I know.
You That's had some what, questions about
I had some questions about the architectural, the more or less the engineering, because I'm like, guys, no.
That's funny. You know what I thought about when I saw that scene is I loved it because, like, reading the books, you know the Magisterium is imposing and intense. But, like, they never described a space like that in the books. And so to see it and how just, like, oppressive and crazy it must be, I thought was really well done. Like, to see the ornate intricacy of a space like that.
Yeah, and I like it's kind of cool and modern rather than old and Victorian.
Yes.
But
still, that was an interesting choice.
You can't hold up a roof like that without significant amounts of modern steel technology.
You never know.
Okay.
They've got those weird zeppelins and stuff.
True.
I like that we're fine with animal spirits, but not poorly engineered
roofs.
Well,
that's always the whole thing, right?
I know. It's like, you know.
We were fine with dragons, but does it really, like, how long does it take to get from King's Landing to the wall, you know? I will say, for those of you who are not Trisha Bobita and who are curious about reading the books now that you've seen the pilot, I do highly recommend the audiobooks because Philip Pullman actually narrates
them.
No,
really?
And there's a full cast of characters as well. So
he narrates and then there are actors.
He narrates
playing the
and then there are actors
oh,
playing
that's
the characters,
great.
Which
I
is pretty
know.
Fun. I had no idea you'd be that enthusiastic about it, Peter, but I'm so glad that
well,
you
Well, I love that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, it's a really good read and it's pretty quick, you know. And if you just did Golden Compass, it wouldn't take that long. Mm. So, you know. Sorry, Trisha. I guess you could do it after. I also like if you really want to read the books, I think that would be okay.
But science.
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 This is a complete change of subject, but Lord Asriel's sweater I thought was lovely.
I enjoyed it too. I like that kind of sweater. I don't know what you call that collar, but I know I have like three of them at home.
What do you, I mean, it's almost, it's like
yeah,
a
I
half,
like, yeah, that sort of V-neck.
Buttons.
Yeah, I like that. I'm all for his style. Sadly, we don't have enough to argue about, but hopefully that will come.
We can only hope.
We can only hope.
I can tell you now that if anybody has anything but a glowing review of Lin-Manuel Miranda, I am going to be... guns a-blazing.
I'm just going to say, you know, I am second to no one in my love for Lin-Manuel Miranda.
You were second to me.
Yeah. All right. He is a human being. He has limits on his talent.
I mean, I like seeing him in Mary Poppins did give me a bit of pause.
I'm just
saying.
We don't
talk about that. We don't talk about Mary Poppins.
All right, so if you all want to weigh in, of course you always can. We love to hear from you. You can just record yourself on your phone using the Voice Memos app and then email it to us at nerdatrecaps@gmail.com. And the best time to send those is actually after you have watched the second episode, like right afterwards when you've got all your feels, just send them our way. The show is produced by us with help by Justin Bull. Our executive producer is Brendan Banizak. Our theme music was once again composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music. Thank you so much, Andrew. We also have special thanks to KUER. Peter, you look like you want to say something.
I was going to say, who needs Ramin Djawali when we got this guy?
Exactly. We are at Nerdat Podcast on Twitter. Trisha is Trisha Bobita. I am Greta M. Johnson. Peter is Peter Sagal. And you can also use the hashtag Nerdat Recaps.
You can. We'll find out.
We'll
find you.
We'll find out about that hashtag. We also have a newsletter. It's pretty great. You can get it at wbez.org/nerdataf. I think that's all I have to say now.
I also think that my favorite sort of set of tweets last night was a lot of academics saying like, oh, is that what you have to do to get a research grant? You just bring a frozen head to the meeting? And then say, who is against me?
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.